Hello and welcome to this fourth episode of the podcast series Help Me Understand. My name is Eid and this is a podcast where I help other people and students like myself understand why things are the way they are in society. And in this episode I'm going to talk to LSE fellow and Dr. Martha Soprana about World Trade and more specifically the World Trade Organization. Because I want to understand the basics of World Trade, the role of the WTO, the World Trade Organization, and how these topics are relevant for the ongoing war between Russia and Ukraine. Because as we all know, trade is critical to the global economy. But how does it really work? Tune in if you're wondering about the same thing. Hello and welcome to Help Me Understand, Martha Soprana. Could you start by giving us a short introduction to who you are?
Thank you very much. I'm very honored to be here today. I am a fellow in international political economy at the Department of International Relations here at LAC. I teach courses on the political economy of trade for bachelor students and master students. And prior to joining LAC, I've worked for over a decade as a trade policy advisor. And I worked in particular with a number of international organizations, such as the World Trade Organization, the International Trade Center, UNCTAD, the World Bank, FAO, in a number of projects that were related to trade. And I've also provided basically technical assistance and advice to some national governments, of course, all with regards to trade. And I am an expert in particular in trading services and digital trade. And I'm currently very much interested in everything that has to do with emerging technologies and artificial intelligence in particular. And I'm also part of a network known as Trade Expirates, which is a network of female trade experts that tries basically to raise the voice and give a voice to the plethora of experts in the field of trade that happen to be women.
Okay, very nice. The perfect trade background then for this episode. Okay, but first of all, Martha, could you start by explaining to us what the World Trade Organization is?
So the World Trade Organization is literally an international organization that is specifically and exclusively dedicated to regulating and facilitating international trade, meaning that this organization was set up in 1995 with the purpose of trying to remove unnecessary barriers to trade, to make it easier to facilitate basically the exchange of goods and services across borders. And I would say that in a nutshell, the organization does three things in particular that are very much relevant for international trade. The first is it's a negotiating forum. This is where its members, which are now about 164, meet and basically negotiate agreements and rules on how basically to deal with international trade, how to reduce or eliminate barriers to trade of different nature, being there tariffs or non-tariff barriers. The second thing that makes the WTO so relevant and so important is that it is also a place where governments can actually resolve disputes using sort of like a third body, let's say, that is comprises of panels and the appellate body. And the third thing that they do is that they monitor the trade policies that governments implement. And this allows basically to see to what extent governments are actually following the rules that they negotiated, to see if there are any policies that are way more restrictive than they should be, and also provides basically with the necessary transparency to know about what's happening on the ground and therefore to what extent they need to negotiate reductions or eliminations of barriers to trade. So in a nutshell, I will say that these are the three sort of key pillars that underpin the working of this international organization, which is based in Geneva. Compared to other organizations, it's a relatively small organization because it doesn't have branches elsewhere. Like, it's all in Geneva. Everything happens in Geneva. And there are about, the secretariat comprises about 600 people that work there, and that sort of facilitate and help the work of the members that negotiate at the WTO.
Okay, very interesting. And you said that there was 164 member countries, but what about the rest of the world, the countries who aren't a member? Why aren't they members of the trade organization?
Thank you very much. This is an excellent question. If we look at the map of the world, we see that the vast majority of trade happens among the members that are part of the World Trade Organization. So these 164 members comprises some of the bigger economies, some of the biggest economy, but also smaller ones. We range from the United States to Europe to China, Russia, to small countries like Vanuatu or Papua New Guinea or Jamaica. However, as you rightly pointed out, there are some countries that are not yet part of the organization. Some of them have tried to exceed the organization for a very long time. Among them are countries that are currently in facing conflicts. So, for example, Syria is not a member of the WTO. Other countries that are not member of the WTO are, for example, Iran. And one of the reasons why some countries are unable to accede to the WTO is that in order to become a member of the organization, there is this accession process. And every decision that is taken at the WTO occurs on the basis of consensus, meaning that all the 164 members have to agree on letting a new country in. So if we take the example of Iran, considering the strained relationship with, in particular, the United States, it is not surprising that there may be different reasons why Iran is not yet part of the organization. But there are a lot of other reasons why, in order to be part of the organization, you need to undertake very significant domestic reforms, because you need to have the technical capacity to be able to implement very complex agreements that cover such a wide variety of issues, ranging from trading services to subsidies to trading goods. So it can be very complex. So in order to become a member of the organization, you need to undertake certain steps in order to be able to do that. So that is also another reason why we don't see sort of certain countries being part of the organization yet. And then, of course, there are countries that maybe are just not interested in being part of the organization, and for the moment have, for example, just observer status at the organization.
Okay. And the countries being members, do they have the same power in terms of making decisions? Or you mentioned the US, do they, for example, possess another level of power than one of the smaller countries?
Also another excellent question. What makes the World Trade Organization very different from other international organizations is the fact that this is a member-driven organization where decisions are based on consensus. So the idea is that basically in front of the law, in front of these multilateral trade agreements that governments negotiate at the WTO, every government is equal in front of the law. They all have one country, one vote, irrespective of how big you are, how much you count for world trade. That said, it is clear that to a certain extent, the relative power and relative economic power of certain countries does play a little bit of a role in the way negotiations take place. If we think about the foundation of the World Trade Organization itself, the agenda was very much driven at the time by the so-called Quad, meaning the European Union, the United States, Canada, and Japan. They very much drove sort of the agenda and said, we're no longer just going to talk about trading goods. We need to start talking about trading services, trade-related aspects of related to intellectual property rights, and a lot of other aspects that weren't really covered beforehand in the GATT system, the precursor of the WTO. And we see even now with the current crisis of the WTO, where the United States in particular has been the country that has led to the stalling in the appointment of the members of the appellate body, which is the second tier of adjudication in the dispute settlement mechanism. And clearly one could say that if a smaller economy had raised the same concerns that the United States did, maybe there would have been more peer pressure to try to convince that smaller country to change their mind or to get different concessions or try to kind of come to a compromise. But clearly, when it is one of the or the most powerful country that somehow disrupts a little bit the system, you can see that relative power does play a role in that, for sure.
Okay, understand. I have a question regarding GATT, which you just mentioned, but first I just need to make something clear. You used two words, multilateral and driven by consensus. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Consensus means that every decision that is taken at the WTO needs to be agreed upon by every single member of the WTO. So meaning that all 164 members have to say, in theory, yes to an agreement. The practice is that basically in a meeting, consensus will work in such a way that as long as no one raises their hand and explicitly objects to the decision is taken. Meaning that in theory, every single country, irrespective of their economic power, does have veto power on every decision.
That's a lot of power given to each of the countries. Okay, so if a country wants to say no, basically, to a negotiation or agreement, they can't. They have the power to do so.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is what has happened with the appellate body appointment of the new members of the appellate body. So the appellate body consists of seven members. And these are seven people that have experience in trade. They are trade experts. And you need three of these seven members for each dispute that has been appealed. So when there is a dispute, you have consultation first, then you have, if the consultation doesn't work, they establish a panel and the panel will make a decision on the particular issue that is at stake in the dispute. If the decision then is appealed by the losing party, probably, then the appellate body has to decide and make their judgment on that particular appeal. You need three members of the appellate body for each appeal. And they are renewed every 4 years. So each member lasts for about 4 years, renewable for another four. For the appointment of these members, you need consensus. And this is where the United States has stalled the appointment of appellate body members because they have explicitly said they are not favoring certain people being renewed and they basically stalled the process. So this is how, in practice, consensus works or stalls decisions.
Okay, and what about the word multilateral? What does that mean?
So when we refer to the agreements that are underpinned or monitored basically by the World Trade Organization, we tend to refer to them as multilateral trade agreements, meaning that these are the agreements that every single member of the WTO has, in a way, participated in the negotiation and agreed upon. We tend to distinguish multilateral trade agreements from other forms of trade agreements, which are plurilateral trade agreements and preferential trade agreements. Preferential trade agreements are agreements that usually governments, which do not necessarily need to be WTO members, negotiate outside the WTO and where they give preferential treatment to the parties, basically. And these are allowed under the WTO rules. And these are usually maybe bilaterally. So the agreement, for example, between South Korea and United States, or they can be known as regional or mega regionals, which are the ones, for example, CPTPP, RCEP, these acronyms that are thrown about every now and then. These are the sort of agreements that are called preferential trade agreements. plurilateral agreements are those that are negotiated, for example, at the WTO, but by a smaller set of WTO members. So it's not the 164 members, but it's a smaller number. And there are ongoing plurilateral negotiations at the moment at the WTO that cover specific areas. So for example, there are plurilateral negotiations on e-commerce that are currently going on at the WTO. So this is how we distinguish. So multilateral is usually what we refer to the GATT, so the agreement on tariffs and trade, the general agreement on tariffs and trade, the GATS, the general agreement on trade in services, the TRIPS, which is the trade-related aspects of intellectual property rights agreement, and all the others sort of that still refer to, for example, subsidies, agriculture, and also this dispute settlement mechanism itself is a sort of the agreement that sets that mechanism is also a multilateral trade agreement.
Okay, so multilateral means that there are a lot of countries. Plurilateral means that there are a smaller group of countries. And bilateral means that there's two countries.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And you mentioned the GATT. So the GATT was what we had before we got the World Trade Organization. Mm-hmm. What were the main differences from having GATT to getting the World Trade Organization?
So the GATT was negotiated and agreed upon in after the Second World War, and it was an agreement that was supposed to basically facilitate the removal of tariffs and other barriers to trade border barriers to trade in goods. And it was negotiated as part of the establishment of this liberal order post World War II, and it was supposed to be just an agreement that the International Trade Organization will monitor. So the idea was, they negotiated the so-called Havana Charter with the idea of establishing an international trade organization that will deal with trade and will accompany the development of the World Bank, the IMF, and other institutions under the Bretton Woods Accords. However, the US Congress did not ratify the Havana Charter, and therefore we never had an international trade organization. So what happened was that the GATT, so this agreement that 23 contracting parties signed on, became a de facto kind of organization, but it wasn't an organization. It was simply a provisional agreement that lasted basically from 1947 until 1994. And among the main difference that I can see between the GATT system and the WTO system is the fact that, first of all, the GATT was not a fully fledged international organization, so it didn't really have a proper structure. If not, they did build some sort of like a secretariat at some point, but the WTO was founded and established as a proper international organization. The second big difference is that the issues that the GATT system monitored and the WTO monitors are very different. So the GATT very much related just to trading goods. They did, during certain negotiating rounds, they did discuss issues such as subsidies, such as anti-dumping, like some of these instruments. But the reality is that only when we had the World Trade Organization, besides trading goods, the members negotiated also rules on trade in services and trade-related aspects of intellectual property rights. The other big difference concerns consensus with respect to the dispute settlement system. So under the GATT system, you only had one tier to resolve disputes. So it was only panels. So you had some sort of consultation, and then, you know, if needed, you created a panel. But when we moved to the WTO added a second layer, which is the appellate body. And this has been long considered the so-called the crown jewel of the organization. And with respect to this passage from a one-tier to a two-tier dispute settlement system, what we saw was a change in the rules for consensus. So I told you before that all decisions at the WTO are taken on the basis of consensus. And this is in a way was happening also under the GATT system. What happened was that when a dispute will arise between two contracting parties under the GATT system, when it came to the end of the dispute and the panel would issue their report, the losing party could actually object to the adoption of the report. And therefore, that decision did not stand as law. I have to say, I've recently discovered that even if there was this rule, the vast majority of decisions were actually accepted, which is a great thing to know. But I know that it is my understanding that one of the countries that objected a little bit more often was actually the European communities at the time. Whereas now that we find ourselves in the WTO system, we have for dispute settlement and the adoption of panel reports and appellate body reports, we have what is known the reverse consensus. So in this case is no longer one country can object to the adoption, but the report, either the panel report or the appellate body, will not be adopted unless everyone agrees not to adopt it. So this is also why they say that we moved from a system under the GATT that was a more power-based system to a system where we're now, or at least how the WTO was established, that is more rules-based system. So that the rules and the setting up of this two-tier system with reverse consensus for the adoption of panel and appellate body reports is able to constrain the power of countries a little bit more than under the GATT system. And clearly the other big difference that I find between the GATT system and the WTO system is that you have now 164 members. We talk about contracting parties when we talk about the GATT, so a little bit the terminology. But what matters is which countries are now part of the organization. And now under the WTO system, we have, for example, big countries like China, who acceded in 2001, and Russia, which acceded in 2011. So we kind of like see that we're covering a greater variety and heterogeneity of countries around the world that are now part of the World Trade Organization. We did have countries at different level of development, even under the GATT system, but in a way, the GATT was very much also representative of the world during the Cold War. So it was very much driven definitely from more Western countries than what we have today.
Would you then say that the World Trade Organization is a more fair way of controlling the world trade than the GATT system was? Might be a tough question to answer.
It is. It is quite a tough question to answer, because I would say that the institutional setting of the WTO does try as much as possible to be as fair as it can be and to take into account sort of the different needs of countries that have very different levels of development. We also have in these systems there are also a lot of provisions that are known as providing special and differential treatment. So provisions that basically give a little bit of more leeway to countries that, for example, are known as developing countries or least developed countries. But I would say that one of the key challenges that the WTO is indeed facing and has contributed in a way to the crisis that the organization is currently facing is exactly the fact that some countries do not feel that their needs have been really and adequately taken into consideration. When the World Trade Organization was instituted, the fact that countries had to agree, in order to be members of the organization, they had to agree to all the agreements, and some of them a bit complex, such as the agreement on trade and services, was seen as, they had to agree to everything under the so-called single undertaking principle, by which nothing is agreed until everything is agreed. So they had to abide by all these rules. And some countries feel that they were kind of like forced a little bit into, you know, being forced to implement agreements that they didn't have necessarily the technical capacity to implement in the same way as others. And they feel that they need a little bit more space to adopt more trade restrictive policies in order to protect their domestic industry. So I would say the WTO has tried to make sure that some of the drawbacks of the GATT system, meaning, for example, the fact that more powerful countries could actually set more the agenda, were kind of improved a little bit with the establishment of the WTO. But it's undeniable that there are still many challenges that the organization faces in order to be to be able to meet the needs of its very heterogeneous membership in the best possible way.
I think you answered that question very well. But I also want to touch up on the current situation in the global economy today. And how has the war between Russia and Ukraine affected the trade situation and the enforcement of the trade rules?
It is undeniable that there have been major repercussions of the war on all aspects of international relations, including trade. We have seen, for example, the adoption of some trade restrictions with respect to Russia. We have seen disruptions in international trade with regards, for example, to wheat and other like food products that Ukraine is a major producer of. And I would say that in terms of how things are being carried out at the World Trade Organization, clearly it is undeniable that certain tensions in international relations because of the world and the war between Ukraine and Russia have somehow also translated a little bit in the daily workings of the World Trade Organization. I would also say that it's not necessarily the war in itself, but it is one of the factors that maybe is contributing to raise in barriers to trade that we have seen in the last 4 to 5 years, even more. I think it's related also to what has happened with basically the trade war between China and the US. So it's like all these different geopolitical tensions are somehow compounding and building together and creating some sort of difficulties in the way international trade develops in this year, including the pandemic that has definitely had a huge impact in global value chains as well. One could argue that the fact itself that we do have an international trade organization, kind of with all the difficulties that the organization is experiencing, maybe it is helping in a way to maintain sort of potential disruptions to international trade to a certain level that maybe without the organization would be much higher. But it is undeniable that all these events, so sort of the U.S.-China trade war, the war between Ukraine and Russia, the pandemic, have all contributed to, you know, make international trade a little bit more difficult in the past few years.
Yeah, I understand. So if we try to sum up everything we have been talking about here today, why would you say that it's so important for the world to have a multilateral and global trade organization like the WTO? Why is that so important for our global economy?
In the end, sort of the beneficiaries of these rules that are negotiated and implemented at the WTO. In the end, this idea is, it's true that it's governments that are negotiating these rules, but the beneficiaries in the end are supposed to be consumers and producers, so each of us and companies that actually sell products and the goods and services across borders. So in order to understand how important the WTO is and what the world would be without it, we need to understand what actually are the real benefits of this organization. And I would say that having rules that are harmonized, so common rules among 164 countries, makes it more predictable for companies and consumers as well to know how to basically buy and sell products across borders, because this is in the end what trade is. It's all about exports and imports, and therefore having these rules make it, harmonized rules, make it more predictable, makes it less costly for companies because they only need to abide in theory to a certain set of rules. And therefore, the products maybe can come to us as consumers at a relatively cheaper price, and we can have access to a wider variety of goods. So this is one of the advantages. And of course, the other advantage of the organization is that you can resolve disputes, with a third party, objective party, and maybe you prevent escalation of disputes into something more challenging. It doesn't get from a trade war to something else, an armed conflict. This is at least the idea. If we don't have this organization, we risk seeing a fragmentation of the rules, and therefore maybe every jurisdiction we will have a proliferation even more of these preferential trade agreements that we see now, but that sort of risks increasing the cost of doing business across borders, and therefore it can be detrimental to both companies and in the end consumers as well. At the same time, also, we have talked about power very often, and we risk, without the WTO, we risk going into a little bit of a law of the jungle, meaning that, disputes or any issue that arises around trade could be determined much more by the relative power of the countries that are in a potential dispute rather than anything else. And therefore, these are the reasons why, for as much as the organization is in need of reform, there are definitely some issues that have come with time that need to be addressed. I would still say that it is worth saving the organization. It is worth living in a situation where we do have an organization rather than without it. History shows us that before Second World War, we did have a situation where countries were signing bilateral agreements. There were the so-called imperial preferences, and the interwar period was a period known as having very high tariffs. And some say that has partially contributed also to tensions that came at a later, and therefore. I would say preserving having an international organization such as the WTO, where countries can negotiate international trade agreements, can try to talk to each other and try to come on an agreement, is beneficial in the long term.
Thank you so much. That was a great way of summing it all up. And thank you so much for stopping by and explaining what world trade is all about. I know that it's a quite big and a quite complex topic to cover in one single episode. So thank you so much for helping us understand it better.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It was a pleasure.